Frank Blair speaking for Fulton Lewis, Jr. from the studios of WOL in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Well, it looks like the end of the road for the bill to extend the term of service of selectees. You know, of course, that the measure was finally passed by the House last night, containing the provision to retain selectees for a year and a half beyond their original 1 year of service. Today, Senate leaders spent the entire morning studying both the House and Senate versions of the bill, trying to decide whether the amendments which were added by the House should be approved. And this afternoon, a decision was reached. Senator Albert D. Thomas of Utah told newsmen after careful consideration, the Senate leaders had decided that all of the House amendments were favorable, that they improved the bill. So tomorrow morning, when the Senate convenes, Senator Thomas will ask his colleagues to approve the House version of the bill, and from what we can gather, the measure will probably be on its way to the White House late tomorrow afternoon. Behind the scenes on this subject, in the past 24 hours, there have been several interesting developments. To begin with, the final House vote last night was 203 to 202, a difference of one vote on this very important piece of legislation. To all outward appearances, the opposition had crumbled long before that vote was taken, so it came as a very great surprise to most observers. Today, we've checked with a number of congressmen who had a part in that fight last night, and although the reports vary considerably as to what actually happened, it became apparent as we talked with more and more people that the opposition actually did not completely crumble. You see, there were several groups opposing that legislation last night. There were some who were against any sort of time extension. Others favored extending the service of guardsmen and regulars, but were against retaining selectees. And still others did not object to keeping them all in service for a few additional months, but were opposed to retaining them for an additional year and a half. When the votes came on the various amendments, therefore, the opposition was split, because some groups were willing to accept compromise amendments. But when the final vote came last night, the opposition as a whole was well organized. Each group objected to one or another of the provisions in the bill, so each group voted against it. Few people seem to have analyzed the outcome in this manner, but it was interesting to note this afternoon when we talked with the various congressmen and mentioned this theory, that they agreed almost to a man that that is what probably happened. So there's the most likely story of what happened last night when an apparently crumbled opposition came within one vote of defeating one of the most important pieces of legislation in this history-making session of Congress. Now for other interesting developments. When the Senate leaders were looking over the House version of the bill this morning, they found themselves faced with one very grave problem. They realized if they decided that the House version was not acceptable, that the bill would then be referred to conferees from both houses, and with the opposition so strong in the House of Representatives, there was a good chance that the bill would be held up in conference for a considerable length of time. So that might have had some bearing on their announcement this afternoon that they're going to ask the Senate to approve the House version tomorrow. Incidentally, there's one thing well worth keeping in mind. From all appearances, the interventionists are going to rue the day that they first heard of draft extensions. Non-interventionist leaders on both sides of the Capitol issued statements today to the effect that the closeness of this vote proves conclusively that Congress will not approve a declaration of war at this time, which means that the fellows who are advocating a shooting war will have to start from scratch, so to speak, if they intend to continue their efforts in that direction. You who are regular listeners to Mr. Lewis's Top of the News from Washington know that it is at variance with his custom to comment or report the foreign news, save when such news tends to have a direct bearing on the United States, or when a development abroad causes all eyes to turn toward Washington for the next move or comment. I'm sure that if Mr. Lewis were here tonight, he would bring you news on the present Franco-German situation and how it affects the already strained Franco-American relations. Last night, you will recall, we took the liberty of bringing you a bit of background on the Vichy news of Admiral Darlan's appointment as chief of everything. Tonight again, we feel called upon to step out of our role as Washington reporter to bring you a few facts. But having done so, we will immediately revert to the Washington scene. First of all, in Vichy, the provisional capital of unoccupied France, some sources described France's latest cabinet shakeup and Darlan's increased powers as merely a technical move to synchronize defenses. In Paris, which is German-occupied, pro-Nazi papers tore into the fact that Pierre Laval was given no office. This is indication that the cabinet shuffle in Vichy and Darlan's appointment have failed to entirely satisfy the Reich. Berlin, however, is making the most of Marshal Pétain's speech of yesterday, and in the following words is described the Nazi interpretation of Pétain's remarks, to quote an official Nazi Party newspaper. Pétain unceremoniously rejected American tutelage and coldly rebuffed President Roosevelt's presumptuous lecturing about France's ideals. That's the end of the quotation. In Germany, it is said that Pétain clearly indicated determination to cooperate with Germany. Another German press source has said, with impressive clarity, Pétain reminded the great American Republic that French ideals are no business of American censors. And authorized German quarters said, in this connection, that the name of Martinique is suddenly reappearing in the American press. Meantime, in London, an authoritative British statement assailed Admiral Darlan as a dictator who would force France into further surrender and collaboration with the Axis. And in view of what's happened in Vichy and the apparent reaffirmed French collaboration with Germany, a cabinet meeting was called today in Ottawa, Canada, to reconsider the future status of the French islands of Saint-Pierre and Miquelon in the Atlantic. Those islands, incidentally, come in within the scope of the Canada-United States Permanent Joint Defense Board. Prime Minister Mackenzie King was asked whether the Canadian government was considering closing the French legation, and he said that relations between Vichy and Berlin were causing grave anxiety in Canada. And here in Washington, our State Department continued to speak very carefully about the situation. Mr. Hull said that he had nothing to say until he has received a full analysis of the new Vichy moves from Ambassador Lay. Mr. Hull declined to discuss the latest aspects of the Vichy situation at a press conference pending receipt of Lay's report. Well, that sort of clears up the picture from a world comment point of view. There's one thing that is not very clear, and upon it hangs the whole answer to the problem. Just in passing, let me recall the fact that the United States is watching very closely the French colonial empire. You'll recall such names as Dakar, Casablanca, and others. Well, General Maxime Weygand, the French proconsul and commander of French colonial forces. And now it has been made clear whether Weygand, it has not been, I should say, made clear whether Weygand is to be subordinated in command of Admiral Darlan. We do know that Darlan is pro-Nazi and Weygand is definitely not for all-out collaboration. Therefore, if Weygand is to be solely responsible for the colonial forces in Africa, that's a different story. The United States then would probably stand by to see whether Germany is using French Africa as a base of operations. It is pretty generally understood that the United States is ready to proceed with appropriate action if it becomes established that full collaboration gives the Axis control over the French colonies in Africa. And don't forget, Secretary Hull has said in reference to Vichy that actions speak louder than words, meaning that we don't want Vichy to say she means well, we want her to show us. And giving Germany access to French bases would be an action our State Department wouldn't like. Now, President Roosevelt is still at sea, or so most Washington observers think. There has been no word from the presidential yacht Potomac, however, since Saturday afternoon. No confirmation, no denial of reports that the President and Prime Minister Winston Churchill are meeting or have met at some secret rendezvous. Latest rumors are that the two leaders met in Iceland and that Mr. Roosevelt took this opportunity to get a first-hand look at our defense efforts there. And there are also rumors that a meeting was held in Newfoundland or Nova Scotia. And one foreign correspondent reported to his home office here that important developments should be expected before the weekend. But getting down to facts, the President has been away from Washington for more than a week. He was last heard from Saturday afternoon when, via Navy wireless, he reported good fishing. No further word has been received from the yacht Potomac, and official sources here have no comment on the matter. Just as much a mystery surrounds Churchill's disappearance from London. He's away from the British capital, and that much is admitted, and so is Harry Hopkins. But where they are, well, you can make your own guess on that score. As for the rest of the news, the House of Representatives was in high gear this afternoon trying to finish work on important pending legislation before beginning a series of three-day recesses next Monday. You remember we reported to you early last week that the House would decide on this three-day recess plan as soon as action on the draft extension bill was completed. In any event, the House rejected by a vote of 254-51 a conference report on the property seizure or draft property bill. The conferees had eliminated several House restrictions in this report, and this afternoon's vote, in effect, instructs them to go back into conference and stay there until they agree with Senate conferees to retain the House amendments. Meanwhile, word got around here this afternoon that a second lend-lease appropriation will be requested soon after the President returns from his fishing trip. The new appropriation request is expected to be for $6 billion. A good portion of which will probably go for the purchase of food for those countries which are defending the democratic way of life. Another step in rushing defense construction came in the form of an executive order from the White House suspending the 8-hour day for mechanics and laborers who are employed by the War Department on construction of vital defense units. But on the labor front in general, strikes continued on the increase today in defense plants throughout the nation, and the War Department admitted that the situation is becoming more serious. The only encouraging note as far as existing strikes are concerned came from Caldwell, New Jersey, where a spokesman for the Curtis Wright Corporation said that for the first time since the strike was called at the propeller plant last Saturday, that there are more men working than are out on strike. As for the Federal Shipbuilding and Dry Dock Company situation at Kearney, New Jersey, well, with the Navy Department officials still holding conferences, with Governor Edison of New Jersey still standing by, and with the company still refusing to accept the proposal made last week by the Defense Mediation Board, the best way to sum up the situation is with a simple report that the status quo is maintained. And that's the top of the news as it looks from Washington. So for Fulton Lewis, Jr. and myself, this is Frank Blair saying good night.
Broadcasting system.